Back on the Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Blue Jays with a tightly contested win last night, a little playoff atmosphere. And they got another one tonight against the Phillies before they head to Cincinnati for a three-game set. It is Kevin Gausman on the mound tonight, so another great pitching matchup to come. Let's talk to John Morosi, our MLB Network insider, about Yusei Kikuchi. John, are you as big as a fan of Yusei as we are?
I am indeed. Ailish and Justin, good morning, by the way. What an outing last night against a quality team, and the precision that he is pitching with right now, the array of pitches that he has. It's one of the great stories for the Toronto Blue Jays this season. They would simply not be in a playoff spot at the moment without Yusei Kikuchi, and he's deserved this spot in the rotation. He's earned it. He's proved a lot of critics wrong, and I'm thrilled for him to see him having this level of success right now for a team that right now is certainly in the playoffs and should stay there if he keeps pitching this way.
I remember about three months ago, we talked to you about Jose Berrios' bounce back season, and we were gushing over what he had been able to do after last season. But it feels like Yusei Kikuchi might have stolen his thunder a little bit with the way that he's bounced back and looks like an integral part of this rotation. And Justin and I were talking this before we had you on, if the playoffs were to start today, he would be in our top two or three. Is that how you're seeing it as well?
It is. And I think, too, that when you talk about how you put together your playoff rotation, you want different looks. And I think a lot of that might depend on who the opponent is. And if you want to have a lefty prominent in that rotation to begin, but he's right there for me. And there are not a lot of teams in the American League playoff race right now that have what I would say is a better rotation than the Blue Jays. There might not be any. I think really it probably comes down to, ironically, the Mariners, the team that the Jays are probably competing with for that third AL wildcard spot at the moment. And we'll see if the Jays really pick things up and start to gain ground on the Rays in front of them. But I like right now the Jays rotation better than both the AL East teams ahead of them. Minnesota's actually has been pretty solid this year, but I still like the Jays better than them. And then you look around at the American League West, and yes, the Astros have Verlander, but I like what the Jays have right now better than any other team that's in the AL playoff picture at the moment, with the possible exception, again, of the Mariners. So I think it's a great story, and I think you take a step back and say, to see Berrios and Kikuchi have these bounce backs in 1 year, you've got to credit the coaching staff, Pete Walker, and the pitching development team that the Jays have in terms of both the coaching side of things, analytically helping these pitchers get the most out of themselves. And I think, too, the catching. I mean, that's really important as well. So I've just been impressed by the entire effort to get Kikuchi back to this spot. But it's been the pitch making, the quality of the pitches, and also, to me, the efficiency, getting deeper into games on a consistent basis. That's the separator, because what we've already seen this year with the Jays and then Romano having to be on the injured list. Of course, he's back now. But to me, when you can minimize the amount of innings that you're needing to go to your bullpen in late August and September, that is as important of an ingredient to a contending team as almost anything else as you get towards September.
Yeah, and if there's been a difference, I guess, with Yusei Kikuchi over, I guess, the last month, 6 weeks, and of course it's been, like, you know, just stellar pitching and improvement on what he was even before when he was having some success, it's that he's been going deeper into ball games and definitely helping out the bullpen that way. I'm not sure what's a bigger surprise, that Kikuchi has had this turnaround or that Ryu has had an effect on this team this season. Of course, he's been, he's put the finishing touches on this rotation, coming back and usurping Alek Manoah, and surprising, I think, a lot of people that he was able to come back from Tommy John surgery and have an impact on this season. I don't know what it means for the rest of the season. I don't know if it's anything more than just, you know, filling that Manoah void. But Ryu has changed sort of the reality of his career, I think, with a really, really diligent comeback and the ability to just be the exact same guy. Short and long-term future for Hyunjin Ryu. What do you see, John?
Yeah, it's a great question, Justin, because I think you consider where Hyunjin is, and of course, 9 scoreless innings over his last 2 starts. He's still probably building back up to to being able to go deeper into ball games. I think that's going to be the last hurdle for him. But with Ryu, as you know, he's always relied on command. And to see his command back, he's not really walking hardly anybody at the moment. That's a really good sign for him and for his for the Jays right now, but also his long-term future. You talk about the number of teams right now who are desperate for pitching help as they enter next season. You got a team like the Mets, who's going to be in their rotation, the Yankees, who's going to be in their rotation. It's going to, I think, really help him entering the marketplace as you talk about his career long-term. I know Jays fans don't want to hear about him potentially leaving, but this is going to be a conversation in a few months here about where he's going to wind up. And I think the reality is you've seen someone that has had an ERA title in the past, an all-star appearance in the past, who is now showing that he's back. And he's 36, but it's now he's got a younger arm because he's coming off of surgery. He's got a new arm. And so when you look at him, he might be able to go, especially when you consider his command and the way that he pitches. He is someone that I think would be able to pitch into his early 40s if he wants to, because he's able to get outs without having to throw 99. And that is a really key thing for teams to look at and a box to check, is that he's able to do it. But I think, to your point, it's going to be really interesting to see what decision, again, let's hope for the Jays that they've got five healthy starters as they approach the postseason. What do they do? And who do they trust to be a super reliever out of the bullpen, if you will? And that's where I would remind Jays fans that we're talking about the way this bullpen looks today. But as long as they get into the dance, they're going to be adding in what I would describe as potentially a deluxe long reliever, stopper, if you will. Maybe it's Ryu, maybe it's Kikuchi, maybe it's Bassett, you never know. But I think they've got a really nice piece that's going to be added to their bullpen to give them some quality length, I would hope, as they approach the wild card series, should they be playing in it.
So where do you think that this leaves Alek Manoah, who's now been sent down once again, and there's not a lot of room in that starting lineup, as you mentioned, that starting rotation? Do you think that that might be the way that he finishes off this season?
Probably. I mean, unless there's an injury, Ailish, I look at it, and the reality is, to put it as clearly as the Jays are probably looking at it internally, they've got five better options right now than him. I think he came back, and the most important thing for Manoah, from my perspective, is that he wasn't great necessarily when he came back, but he was at least competitive. He showed, I think, especially in the start against Boston, he goes against a team that was tough on him early in the season, and he put together a quality outing. If I'm the Jays, I just keep showing him footage of that outing time after time after time and remind them of what he can still do, because he's there. It's still in there. He's a young man. He's 25 years old. Whatever the reasons were early on that caused the struggles, he's shown that he at least understands how to work through them and get back to the big leagues. And if I was the Jays, I would just have pump up all that positivity and say, look, we still believe in what you can do. You have to still work on some adjustments mechanically, whether it's in your preparation, whatever it might be. We believe in you, but the candid reality is they've got five better starters. And also, he walks too many guys to be, at the moment, a reliable reliever. So there's not a spot. There just isn't. There might be a team. Ailish, when you think about all of the shortage of starting pitching, and this is going to be where it's interesting in this offseason, if there's a team that is willing to give him a shot, that is, again, I've mentioned the Mets and Yankees as a couple examples. Teams that are just bereft of starting pitching right now that might say, hey, he's better than our fifth starter. And for that, for the opportunity to bring him in, we would give up this level of prospect. That conversation will definitely happen. Mm-hmm. The Jays' phone is going to ring this offseason with people who want Alek Manoah. It's just a question of, are they ready to give him up? Obviously, at that point, Ryu is not on the roster unless he re-signs. How much would they have to be bought out of that conversation to give him up? But I just for now, he just hasn't thrown enough strikes to be a trusted long reliever, and he obviously hasn't pitched better than the five guys they've got in the rotation. So to me, it's a pretty clear decision. I think the Jays have to look at it as the success of Ryu has made a difficult decision very clear, and that's where they're at right now.
So you say those conversations around Manoah will happen this offseason. Will they be one-sided conversations, or do you think, you know, the Blue Jays will be looking to engage in conversations around Alek Manoah?
I think they're going to have to listen. They will, because what I would say is, looking at the Jays lineup, what if there's a similar change of scenery concept that makes sense? I mean, the Jays at the moment, they're going to have to, you know, you have to sort of assume that the free agents aren't re-signing until they do. So that's, you have to look at it and just say, okay, they're off the roster as the season ends. So is there a third baseman that you could get for Manoah? Is there an outfielder that you could get for Manoah, depending on what Kiermaier's status is and where you want Varsho to play? I think this team, it would help them to be maybe still even a little more athletic, but we're now 1 year into the new baseball and seeing how they may need to. I mean, last night was obviously a low-scoring win. It was at least a win, but it was low-scoring. I think the Jays have to find some ways to creatively score runs that don't involve hoping that Bo and Vlad come up with a big hit every inning, which obviously is not realistic. So I think that I'm not necessarily suggesting that they're going to be able to get a third baseman of Chapman's ability for Manoah. I would highly doubt that, but that's the kind of thing that they should at least think about. So it's hard to sell low on a pitcher that's been an all-star, but the reality is the need for starting pitching in the industry is great. And also the belief that the one thing that I would say that probably is true for all professional sports, and this, I mean this word in a good way, that the hubris of teams will never fail. We can fix them. We've got a better way of getting the most out of Manoah or any other player. The hubris is always going to exist in a good way in an industry like this. And there will be a lot of GMs that believe that their process will be able to unlock the all-star level pitcher that Alek Manoah was as recently as last season.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, further complicating matters, I guess, this offseason, if we want to go fully down the rabbit hole of the offseason, which I think we should, Whit Merrifield. I mean, we're talking about replacing important contributions. There have been few more important than the contributions of Whit Merrifield this year. There is a mutual option opportunity, which will pay him handsomely. But with the season he's having and the adjustments he's made and the value I think that he's added to his resume, what do you think the next contract's going to look like? Whether it's the Jays that are signing that deal or not, what do you think the next contract's going to look like for Whit Merrifield, who's put himself in a position to cash in at age 35?
You know, it's a really interesting question. I think for Whit, so to your point, he'll be playing in his age 35 season. Unclear maybe what his position would be. I mean, that's part of his versatility, is that you can wait on that a little bit. If I'm the Blue Jays looking at Merrifield's deal, $18 million, I realize it's a significant amount of money, but that's an easy yes for me on that side of the option. Easy, because he helps you in so many places. He's an all-star. He's been, after Bo, their most consistent hitter this year. That is a worthwhile investment for a player who does everything that he does. Now, does Whit decide he wants to go out in the market and see what he can do? Could he do better than one for 18? Again, 35 years old, that's the tricky part. Teams have generally been reluctant to go down that path for players who are beyond their mid-30s to sign them to a multi-year deal. He's a really good athlete. He's been a very durable player. Obviously, he was the Iron Man of the American League for several years there in Kansas City. He's been great and durable for the Jays this season. It's going to be a tough call for him. I think it's probably going to come down to, you know, how he finishes the year, what he wants to do. The reality is this. If he and he signed, as you recall, very young in Kansas City, he signed a multi-year deal because he had arrived in the major league so late, didn't even debut until his age 27 season. So he wanted to make sure that he got that amount of money during that time in KC. So he's never really been able to be the free agent and truly test the market. If you want to test the market, you're probably at this age never going to have a better platform year than a 304 average and an OPS close to 800 with all the versatility that he brings. He's already stolen more than 20 bases. If he wants to test the market, there is no better platform year for him at this stage of his career than what he's having right now. So that leads me to believe that the mutual option might be a Jays yes, and Witt says, no, I want to go explore the marketplace. I would advise the Jays to maybe see if you can tack on one more year before that happens and just keep him, because if you have to replace him as well on top of third base, on top of seeing what exactly you're going to do with Springer and Varsho, you need some certainty. And Witt is really, outside of Bo, he's the next most sure thing they've had in the lineup this season.
Yeah, he certainly has been. John, I want to ask you about just sort of like bullpen philosophy. I've been wrestling with the quality of the Jays bullpen all year, because in my mind, I mean, it's just not something they usually have. But I'm also, you know, you look at some of the pieces and maybe you're not convinced about individuals. And I guess, in your experience, covering and watching baseball, what is the sort of bullpen that matters most in the playoffs? And is it different than a bullpen that is dominant in a regular season? If we're doing like strong link, weak link here, I mean, you clearly need everyone to have a dominant bullpen in the regular season. You kind of need everyone to be pretty good. And that's what the Blue Jays have right now. But I'm not sure they have those guys that are going to be in a playoff or in the playoffs or in a playoff series that every night you can throw out there and be dominant, 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 dominant. And usually you can't have a full bullpen of those guys, but you can have a couple that can carry you through. So is it a quality versus quantity thing? The Blue Jays definitely have quantity, and maybe they have quality too. And they do have quality. We saw it last night with Jordan Hicks and Jordan Romano. But what's more important, having a couple guys who are truly, truly dominant, can't miss, or a full complement of high, above average plus arms in your bullpen? When it comes to the playoffs, what's more important, you know, having a couple really good guys or having a complete bullpen that's ready for any scenario, really?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that what I would say is, if you've got 2 to 3 guys who are completely locked in, I would take that over the full depth of 7 guys, 8 guys, whatever it ends up being. Because you need those 2 or 3 guys, I think, to be able to go to, especially when you're in the Jays situation, you've got a pretty good rotation. You need that core group. And to your point, I would point out that ERA-wise, the Jays have, as we speak right now, the 4th best bullpen ERA in all of baseball right now. 4th best in the entire sport. Ironically, the Yankees lead the majors in bullpen ERA, but they're going nowhere at the moment. And the thing I would say too, and within this, it's strike throwing. It is strike throwing. You know, Hicks, I think if Hicks is in the zone, they're going to be just fine. I think Hicks is as important as anybody else in that bullpen, probably the most important arm, I would say. Even more important than Romano in some ways, for this reason. He has got the velocity, as we know, to get anybody out anytime. But he's just got to be in the zone. And when he's in the zone, he's a difference maker. That's who he is. He, to me, when you consider what Hicks can do and what Romano can do in that group, the reason why I mentioned strike throwing is if you start walking guys late, it is dangerous because you're going up against a good lineup, and you're giving that lineup more chances to hurt you. And I remember this. This is a bit of advice and a true baseball statement that comes back to me every time at this time of year from my mentor, John Lowe, great baseball writer, now in the Hall of Fame. John would always say, walks are not just walks within an inning. What a walk does is it advances the lineup and turns the lineup over. So if you have extra walks, even if it doesn't hurt you in the 5th or 6th inning, it gets you that much closer to flipping the lineup over for a 4th time. And that is dangerous when you're facing elite hitters at the top of the lineup, when the leadoff guy is Julio Rodriguez, which has been the case for the Mariners here lately. Do not flip the lineup over in extra time. And a walk moves you closer to doing that. Every time you get a base runner, you get closer to doing that. And I think that's where the Jays, they've got to be mindful of that, because you flip that lineup over one more time in the playoffs and it can change your entire season. So strike throwing from that group to me is going to be really crucial. But I'm glad you asked that, because I look at guys like Bowden Francis, Jay Jackson, who has saved their staff, I think, in some ways, Tim Mesa. They've had a lot of unsung heroes, Genesis Cabrera. It's been a really good group. I think by and large, the Jays should be very proud. And again, for as much as, let me just tell you, every fan in every market everywhere worries about their bullpen at different times. And it's important to remember that only three teams in baseball have had a better bullpen ERA than the Jays this year. So my message to the Blue Jays fans are, you got them pretty good, because overall your guys have done the job this season.
Yeah, it was a pretty good 1-2 punch there with the Jordans to end the game last night. Great watching, and it was great theater with the Jordan Romano making his return, and Rogers Center was pretty fired up about that. One more for you, John, before we let you go. Yesterday, late last night, Shane McClanahan going to undergo Tommy John surgery for the Rays, putting him on the shelf for all of next season as well, and obviously the Rays are dealing with a shortened lineup with Wander Franco out as well. Is there like a trend? Because there's a lot of pitchers on the Rays that have had to have Tommy John in the last little while. And then, you know, is this an opportunity for other teams to take a step forward? Are the Rays maybe going to take a step back, or a little vulnerable at this time?
Yeah, Alish, I agree. I think the Rays are vulnerable at the moment. And when you look at their pitching, you're right. I mean, it is something that I would expect they're going to look at. They've obviously been one of the most forward-looking organizations in baseball in their analytics area for a long time. And now having this number of starting pitchers out and on the IL with longer-term injuries, certainly Rasmussen has already been there and gone this season. Jeffrey Springs as well. They've missed a lot of their guy Shane Boz as well since the season even began. So I do think they're vulnerable. They're really going to have to lean on Eflin and Glass now. But as we're talking about it right now, if you had to say who has the more consistent rotation going forward, the Jays or the Rays, the Jays clearly do. And I think that, just as I look at it, again, it's one snapshot, a moment in time. I believe that the record that the Jays have between now and the end of the season is going to be better than what the Rays have between now and the end of the season. The question is just, is there enough schedule left for the Jays to eclipse them and pass them by? It's still a four-game spread, which is not going to be easy. But that's the Jays are going to be a better ball club, I think, over the balance of the year. They're going to have to look at, I think, if I'm the Rays, as analytically inclined as they are, they're going to have to really look carefully at what has led to this. Is this just a case of a lot of arms that kind of a lot of elbows that sort of expired right around the same time based on when they arrived? The age of the players, or is it something deeper? I think that's what they're going to have to look at. For McClanahan, to your point, it's actually his second Tommy John, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And given the month of the year that we're in right now, we're already in August, it's going to take, much like Walker Buehler is going through right now with the Dodgers, it's going to take a Herculean effort for him to be able to come back and contribute down the stretch even next year. So this has been a very worrisome week from the Rays' perspective on their pitching, and the Jays right now, they certainly have an opportunity to jump right into second place in the American League East.
Yeah, lots of big games for the Blue Jays ahead, including a Baltimore Orioles series next week, which we'll be excited about. John, appreciate you taking the time this morning. Always great to chat, and we'll catch up soon.
Likewise, Ailish and Justin, I'm also excited. Jeff Petrie comes home. He's wearing that number. I'm excited about this, that the Wings defensive core is getting better. We're like reuniting the 21 Habs defensive core. They now have Sherratt there at Petrie. I'm pretty excited right now. I think it's going to be, I've been saying it for a long time, playoffs in Hockey Town for the first time in a long time coming up.
And our guy, Justin Hall, at about $3.5 million. Good payday for Justin Hall.
That was a good deal.
it's all expensive.
I'm telling you something. I'm telling you, the critiques of Hall's game, I think, will be much more charitable in Detroit.
Yes.
He was the guy that got all, as you know, got a lot of criticism in Toronto. I think it's going to be a much, much improved Wings decor. I'm all on board.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
NHL around the corner, John. We'll get both your takes coming soon.
Can't wait.
Chat soon.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
That's John Morosi, MLB Network Insider. This soccer match is just electric.
It's heating up. It's heating up for
1-1,
sure.
1-1 Australia and England in the semifinals. There's been chance after chance after chance. So if you have the opportunity to put it on, it's in the 70th minute.
Yeah, Sam Kerr scored a pretty brilliant goal to tie it. So, you know, we had Sam Kerr, top goal scorer, started the tournament, immediately injured. But let's say she scores, you know, a couple
more.
I mean, a hat trick in the final, maybe we got a chance.
Okay. Speaking of soccer, yesterday we had a little TFC adjacent news and we got another one. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. Okay.
England just scored.
Oh. That's not the chew, but...
I mean, it could be.
It is. England now up 2-1 on Australia. Okay, so TFC reportedly opening their doors for Sebastian Giovinco, 36-year-old, who obviously we know has spent some time here in the city. They let him use their training facilities. Okay, so pump the brakes.
It's not the first time they've flirted with this either.
Yeah, so they letting him come and train and check out, you know, the city again and reunite. He's not training with the club, but he is using the facilities and the team officials are reportedly keeping an eye on him. Left in 2019, in January, over what was salary dispute. The Atomic Ant.
It's a great name.
We know him well. So should TFC be pursuing a return?
This is my whole point yesterday.
Yes, I knew you were going to bring this
up. They are out of ideas. This organization is out of ideas. They just can't do things the way you're supposed to be doing it, where you're like building from the ground up and you're trying to develop players. It's like we have no one that we can replace our buddy Bernadeschi with, who's going to Turkey to play somewhere else. So I don't know. Atomic Ant, we still have his number. It's the same thing. I can't believe that they could be the standard for as long as they were, and now it just seems like they have no idea how to run.
They could use some scoring help.
They could. They could use some scoring help.
Is he the answer? Is he the Messi for TFC?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I mean, he could have been the Messi of MLS to a. Yeah. To a certain degree. No, that's a big stretch.
That's
a big stretch, but he was an impact player a long time ago. And I don't know.
He was an MVP.
Let's just see if he can, you know, let's see what he's got left. It's not going to win you many soccer matches.
They're just swinging for the fences at this point.
Exactly. In a league where Leo Messi.
Yeah.
It's just, it's disheartening.
That's
it's TFC
your
team. I don't know what they're doing.
That's your chew. All right. Amy Lawrence is going to join us after the break. As we mentioned, she's always on our station with CBS Sports, the simulcast in late, early morning hours. So if you're driving around 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. to 6 a.m., you're usually hearing Amy Lawrence. So we're going to get her on the show next. She covers it all, but definitely want to chat some football with her, do a little preview of the NFL just around the corner. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 2-1 England right now in the 78th minute. Turn that on if you want to see how this one shakes up before the final on Sunday. We will chat with Julie Stewart-Binks to wrap up our show, who's going to help us look around and preview what will be a new champion regardless in FIFA World Cup. Starting on Sunday, that final will be set. But before then, we get to catch up with a legend. We listen to this voice. It's the first voice we ever hear when we wake up and... She's grinding always overnight.
In my darkest moments, this is the voice.
Amy Lawrence guides us into the studio, broadcasting live weekdays from 2 to 6 a.m. on CBS Sports Radio, which we obviously simulcast here. And if you've heard her, you know she does it best. So Amy Lawrence, host of After Hours, joins us. Amy, we've been dying to hear from you and to chat with you because it's a one-sided relationship right now. We listen to you. We love
you. We know you.
You don't know that we exist. So thank you for helping us in the darkness of the night.
Oh, well, first of all, I appreciate the legend part. I have been around a really long time. That generally means you're old, but I will take it. It means I've lasted, so that's really important. And honestly, we do have a lot of listeners who will find me on social media from Toronto, or if they don't necessarily abide in Toronto, they listen on the network that spans the country. So I call you my friends to the north, and it's really a privilege to be on your show this morning. Thank you.
Well, it's a long time coming. We always bring it up. We should have Amy on, but like we're like, oh, she works from 2 to 6 a.m.
Yeah, this feels kind of cruel because I have to immediately sleep when I get home, and you're done your shift.
Oh, well, see, that's not me.
So I can't.
Yeah, what's your
strategy? I have a zoo that runs my life. Yeah, so my dog, who is getting pretty close to 14, she walks very slowly, but she's an Australian Shepherd. She has to have her exercise. Mm-hmm. And so when I get home, I'm famished. I don't know what it is about talking that makes me so dang hungry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I get home, I have to eat. The zoo has to eat. Penny has to go for her walk. I had to rush her today, which is not easy to do when she is already essentially going slower than molasses. And so you know, she's staring at me right now too, wondering why I'm making so much noise when she's trying to go to sleep. But yeah, I generally don't go to sleep till about 8:30. Sometimes it's even later if I'm reading. So no biggie. This is perfect. Thank you.
Okay. I'm glad that we're not bothering you. I was definitely a little bit concerned about that. So, it kind of like informs us a little bit when we're coming in to do our show, because of course we're Toronto centric, but there are a lot of other things going on, and you're definitely able to fill us in on our way in, which is great. So let's go to the NFL to start here. And clearly the New York Jets are absorbing and soaking up a lot of the headlines here, but now they make the Dalvin Cook addition, Aaron Rodgers, Hard Knocks, the whole thing. Like, does this feel like something that's going to be a massive flop, or do you think this thing is going to be pretty successful with Aaron Rodgers and what's kind of an all-star team that's cooking up in New York?
Yeah, well, first of all, can I just say I'm already tired of talking about it, and we haven't even kicked off the season yet, but that is the business, right, where you hammer a particular topic or story. We call it playing the hits. It's kind of the same as it is for music radio. I do think it's an upgrade. There's no way that you can bring in a quarterback as cerebral as Aaron and not have it instantly be an upgrade over what they were doing last year at the position, which is Zach Wilson floundering, Mike White, who really was a great leader but is limited in his skill set for obvious reasons. And so those two guys combined aren't Aaron Rodgers as a Hall of Fame quarterback. And then to bring in, the key really for the Jets was to bring in an offensive coordinator that he's extremely comfortable with. He and Nathaniel Hackett speak the same language. He thinks highly of Nathaniel. There's extra motivation there because they don't like how Hackett was treated by the Broncos last season. So you're automatically going to have a smarter guy who's running your offense, a smarter leader. And then you think about the respect factor and how, this is kind of funny, think about if you're on the offensive line. Do you really want to be the weak link that allows Aaron Rodgers, your 40-year-old quarterback, to get smacked onto his rear end? Right? Like, you don't want to be the reason why he gets hit or gets sacked. And so everybody's on their best behavior almost. It's like you have a special visitor in your classroom, or you know, someone, like maybe the boss or the owner of your company is walking through that day. You're being evaluated. Nobody wants to screw up now because they understand what's on the line. I do think it helps that they're bringing in a bunch of veterans, some with whom he's familiar, some that he's not. And so you think about the Dalvin Cook. He played against him, obviously, right, when he was in Minnesota and Aaron was in Green Bay. But also the additions of Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb, who's really more of his security blanket and his BFF than he is an actual weapon on the field. And so to put guys around him that kind of create that comfort zone, not that Aaron can't adapt, but that's important. And you remember, Tom Brady had the same thing when he went to Tampa. He brought guys in, the Buccaneers brought guys in that he was real comfortable with. So that's one thing. I do believe that they're going to have a winning record. I wouldn't be surprised if they make the playoffs, but I wouldn't say it's a lock for this reason. The division that they're in has got four teams who have designs on making the playoffs. And then you think about the AFC. They have a killer first month of the season on their schedule. So we're going to find out really quick, because they have to play at Dallas. They have to play the Bills in week number one. They have the Chiefs. If I'm not mistaken, it's week 5. They play the Super Bowl. champions, or maybe it's week four. So their schedule right away forces them to be locked in. And if they're not, which, you know, there's a chance that they could have some slip-ups as they kind of find their footing, you know, they could find themselves at 500 before we're even out of the gate. It's a long season. They're in a tough division. That's my biggest qualm about saying, yeah, gung-ho, let's see Aaron Rodgers lead the Jets to the Super Bowl, because they've got at least one other team in that division that is an actual Super Bowl contender, and the Dolphins made the playoffs last year, even though they started what felt like 15 different quarterbacks. So it's a really tough place to be if you're the Jets.
Yeah, that AFC East, the AFC Beast, as they always call it, looks even more tight this season. It looks like even three teams could even make a push for the playoffs. But, you know, we're adjacent to Buffalo here, so we talk a lot about the Bills.
Yes.
I feel like they're one of the teams league-wide that has the most pressure on them. You know, they have that window, and people say it might be closing. But, like, do you view them as having something more this year, something more to give that can help them close that gap? And if they don't, like, is it just a pressure cooker there in Buffalo?
Well, it is. It is a pressure cooker, and it doesn't help that they are the story in Buffalo or Western New York, right? Mm-hmm. So I went to Syracuse for my master's degree, and my first commercial job in radio was in Rochester. And the only sport that really existed in any way, shape, or form, even in Rochester, was the Buffalo Bills. It's a religion there. It's a lifeblood. It's a little bit like college football in some of the towns in the South and in the South and also the Midwest, the Buffalo Bills really set the tone. People live and die with them, right? And maybe it's that way for fans that you have of your radio station too. People set their mood and their watches based on what's happening with the Buffalo Bills. Now, I would say the pressure is there because this is Josh Allen's prime. This is the prime of his career. I do think the key for them offensively is to find a consistent run game. And I say this a lot, but if Josh Allen is your leading rusher, that's not your best self as a Bills offense. You cannot afford to have him be your lead back. I know that there are teams where, you know, the quarterback set the tone with the ball. They'll rush Lamar Jackson, Justin Fields. It's not a long-term recipe for success. He's a huge dude, right? And he can truck guys. That's not really the point. The point is that you do not want him taking extra hits. You want to protect him. So I think they need to have a consistent run game to keep defenses honest. But I do like what they've got. I like the package. And, you know, to go back to what you asked about the Jets, it's not so much that the Bills aren't good enough or that they aren't a Super Bowl contender. You don't operate in a vacuum, right? There's other teams that are just as good as you and have the same goals as you. And I use this example too. The Golden State Warriors, they dominated the West for the better part of 8 years. Imagine the other teams that might have been able to ascend out of the West had it not been for them running into the Warriors over and over again. The Rockets, the Oklahoma City Thunder, you know, there's other teams, Portland. And it's the same thing with the Cavaliers, right? They run into the Warriors 4 straight years in the finals, and they only end up winning once. I mean, that's sports, right? When there's a team that's better than you, well, you keep running into them. So the Bills have got to figure out how to beat the Chiefs. They've got to figure out how to beat the Bengals. But certainly they are a Super Bowl contender. It's just the competition is tight right now in the AFC.
It's 3-1 now for England in the 89th minute. Alyssa Russo scoring to make it 3-1. So it might be a Spain-England final here. So let's stick with the NFL. Go to the NFC. The Eagles, of course, were the, talk of the regular season, I think, last year, starting out as hot as they did and having Jalen Hurts probably be the breakout star of the entire season. And now things get a little difficult when you go to Super Bowl. The schedule gets a little tougher. There's more eyes on you. But this Philadelphia team has, like, kind of existed as the standard, at least in the NFC. Now, they get so many flowers at the draft. They're doing what they want in free agency. They add DeAndre Swift. Is this team better, more prepared, better equipped to take another deep run? And can anyone really challenge them in what is a weaker NFC?
Yeah, I would say their own division is prepared to challenge the Eagles. And the one reason I would say that is because they're not intimidated by Philadelphia, right? And that's rivalries. You're not going to be intimidated by the fans, the atmosphere. In fact, you relish it if you're the Cowboys or you're the Giants. I know the Commanders have been the ugly redheaded stepchild of the NFC East, but, I mean, they're bringing in a new offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy. They believe that he can toughen them up. So I do think, yes, the Eagles are the team to beat. And as you point out, they have continued to add pieces. And it helps when you go to a Super Bowl, right? Because then other free agents, other pieces see that. And they're like, oh, yeah, me, pick me. And so the Eagles, the rich have gotten richer. But don't forget about the Niners. They also started three different quarterbacks last year. And if there's a team that can push the Eagles around, that can use their strength and their physicality, I know people hate that word, if they can be physical in the trenches, then they actually can have that advantage over the Eagles. Now, the Eagles, they had, what, four different guys with 10 sacks last year? Don't quote me on that. They also had, you know, the run game was incredible. So in order to beat the Eagles, you have to be able to stop them in the trenches. You have to be able to dominate or at the very least block and not allow them to run all over you. There's definitely a standard there. And I think the experience, I'm a big fan. I know that not everyone believes experience can be critical, but I think it's important when you're in those moments where the pressure is amped up. If you've been there before, you know what it takes to win, you have an edge, and the Eagles definitely have that now with back-to-back playoff experiences. Maybe they weren't expected to get to the Super Bowl last year, but they did, and now they can build on where they are now.
We're chatting with Amy Lawrence, host of After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Let's move to a little basketball before we let you go. James Harden. James Harden. Yeah. We got the Canadian perspective up here. You know, Nick Nurse is down there, and we've kind of like...
We're worried about Nick. We're a little worried about Nick.
Him a bit. But James Harden calling Daryl Morey a liar, going on this little tour in China and saying whatever he wants. How do you think this is going to shake out? Because I saw yesterday that this is just the beginning, and he's going to make it really uncomfortable for Philadelphia going into training camp.
Well, there is a precedent for that, is there not? Don't get me started on James Harden. He is, in my opinion, the worst of professional sports. I take every opportunity to rip him. It's one thing if you can hit three-pointers when there's a playoff series on the line, but since you generally go over or can't hit the broadside of a barn when the pressure is turned up to its highest, don't talk to me about how I need this and I need that and that guy's a liar. I mean, it's rich, too, because he does it in China. Oh, my gosh. I mean, how ironic is that when you talk about the NBA? And the thing is, he has a history with Daryl Morey, right? So he did this in Houston when Morey was there. He pitched a fit. He acted like a baby. He threw tantrums. He was fat. He didn't follow COVID protocols. He disrespected his new coach and his teammates in Houston. He made life miserable for Morey and everyone around him so that he could get his way. That's a spoiled brat. And seriously, remind me the last time a team that Harden played on actually went to the NBA Finals or won anything. So this annoys me to no end. He's doing it again because he feels like he has Maury's number and he knows how to manipulate Morey. Why? Because when you're a child, you know, you learn with these patterns, right? So he was validated before by acting like a jerk, and now he's going to try to do it again in Philadelphia. If I'm Morey, I do the same thing the Texans did with Deshaun Watson. And I know they had to pay him for a year where he wasn't playing, but they refused to trade him until they got every last thing they wanted from a trade partner. And if I'm Morey, I mean, he's locked in. He can't leave unless he's going to sit out an entire year, in which case, he's going to owe a lot of money. James Harden has no leverage, which is why he's ticked off at Daryl Morey, because he believed that Morey was going to try to trade him. Well, he did, and there weren't any takers. I mean, that's a problem when you've got a reputation and nobody wants you on their team or wants to pay that kind of price. So, yeah, I think Morey should, in fact, stand pat, wait until they get what they want. And honestly, guys, there may not be a team that's willing to offer a whole lot, so he's going to have to bide his time. It's annoying to me that Harden's going to do this again and be a spoiled, entitled NBA player and just try to force his way out of another. This would be the third one in a row, right? Third franchise in a row where he's asked his way out, forced his way out because he wasn't happy.
Okay, Amy, before we let you go, we got to ask you, like, what the Toronto sports story that makes the most, or at least creates the not the most buzz on After Hours, but, like, in the production room? If you're talking about, okay, is it the Leafs hitting the inevitable wall? Is it, like, DR DeRozan haunting the Raptors? Aww. Like, what sort of got what Toronto-related sports story got your attention the most, I guess, so far in 2023?
Okay, well, I would say the Blue Jays are a great story. I mean, they're operating in relative anonymity because that AL East is so good and because it's generally one of those situations, right, where you're either talking about the top or the bottom, and they've been in the middle, but they very well could end up as a wild card team, should end up as a wild card team, and I think that's a good story. So I do talk about the Blue Jays in that case. Some of the ways they've won lately, it just has been hysterical, right, with like hit by pitches and all kinds of stuff. But I do like their good young talent, so that'll be fun to watch. I will be honest, as much as I don't want to make it seem like I'm rubbing it in, that proverbial wall you talk about with the Maple Leafs, and it's not just Toronto hockey, it's Canadian hockey, mm-hmm. right? And it comes up every single year where no matter how much talent, thinking about Edmonton, right, no matter how much talent, there hasn't been a Canadian team that's made it back to the Stanley Cup final. I am rooting for you guys. I really am. Let's get this demon exercise. And then I do think that I hear from a lot of, I'm trying to think back, like it's not a story right now, but it will be, that there's a lot of Toronto sports fans who love the Bills, mm-hmm. and so I will hear from a lot of people north of the border who are just really excited about Buffalo football.
Well, this
again
is our year, Leafs.
Yes,
Andy,
you there
heard
you go.
We'll be listening to you late in the season when you're coming in on our drive talking about how great the Leafs are in the playoffs.
So
we'll make it
I
happen.
Like it.
And then we can come on
yes
your show and we can talk about the Leafs.
There you
one
go
of those hours.
All right. We'll tag team it, both
I
of you.
That.
We'll just
I
show up
it
and talk about Leafs.
Perfect. Well, Amy, what a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks again for killing it for us while we're driving in the mornings, and we hope to get a chance to chat with you soon.
Oh, anytime. You know I'll talk football anytime, guys. Perfect. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thanks so much. That's Amy Lawrence, host of After Hours on CBS Radio. And as we mentioned, she's on from 2 to 6 a.m. and we simulcast that, and you can listen to her before you listen to us. She's great.
That was awesome. Yeah.
She is awesome.
She's kind of the fail-safe where it's like, oh, did I miss something? Not if you listen to Amy Lawrence on the way in to do this show. Yeah. So that was pretty
she
cool.
She doesn't like James Harden.
No. Had some words
rightfully
for James Harden.
So. She just shredded him.
She,
good for her.
She really did.
Good
she
for
really
her
did.
Okay.
England officially through
yeah
to the final. England,
it
Spain, World Cup final. That's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. 3-1 win over the host nation. That's too bad. I wanted to see Australia there in the final, but it'll be a great one. We will chat with Julie Stewart-Banks at 8:30, host the football show on SiriusXM, and obviously a big, big soccer gal. We'll go through now the official World Cup final set. Who's got the edge? The new champion will be crowned regardless. There's a lot of drama with the USA, and obviously Canada had their short moment as well. So we'll go through all that with her at 8:30. But before we get to Jeff Blair on the other side of the break, today's a special day. The Sportsnet Jays Care broadcast auction begins. The 16th annual Sportsnet Jays Care broadcast presented by TD. They've raised over $2 million for Jays Care. If you know about it, you always love to hear about the great auction items available. It'll be hosted by our very own Ivanka Osmak. And fans can bid on incredible Blue Jays prize packs, limited edition items. And some of those are really, really, really awesome. So the auction items will begin later today. Some of them are golfing with Adam Hadwin and Joe Carter. A starting bid of $15,000, but it's probably
with or without a security detail.
Yeah, that's we'll come and we'll tackle anyone you need.
Okay.
Golf with Russell Martin,
pretty
throwing
good
the first pitch, the ceremonial first pitch, Sportsnet experience with Donovan Bennett. You can get you can bid on some bobbleheads. You can bid on merchandise itself, experience packages like concerts. I see Guns N' Roses, Bruce Springsteen, Leafs and Raptors, nights out. There's even a date night at the Rogers Center you can bid on. You can bid on being in the booth with Ben Wagner, obviously our Sportsnet 590 voice. There's memorabilia, there's stadium seats, there's Danny Jansen memorabilia, alumni autographed items. There's so much here, and it all begins later today. There'll be lots of ways to support Jays Care. They raise money for youth empowering, facing barriers across the entire country. So a lot of great things to come from today's 16th annual broadcast auction. So stay tuned for more information, but incredible, incredible prizes. So I hope everyone gets a chance to take a look, and whether you can just donate, if you can't afford to, you know, bid on a $15,000 golf game, then there's lots of ways that you can donate and help at Jays Care. So that's today.
Oh, we love Jay's Care. Jay's Care, if Jay's Care is involved, you know they're doing it big. They do everything that they do is big, and these prizes are awesome. Golfing with Adam Hadwin and Joe Carter.
Sick.
I mean, talk about nervousness off the first tee, let alone today at Osprey Valley.
Yeah. Lots of great items for way different ranges as well. So
yeah,
take a look.
It's pretty cool. Worth checking out.
And donations are always welcome. So take a look at that later on in the show and today on Sportsnet. So we do have a final game of this two-game set against the Phillies. It will be Gausman and Nola on the mound. Let's talk to Jeff Blair after the break, host of Blair and Barker, about our guy Yusei Kikuchi. That's next.